right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
I'm a servant. That's a pen.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits.
Late Hits.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you. Can't interrupt Vernon Reed when he breaks out that line. Just can't do it. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. All HRMP listener line. On text line. On Twitter at PCreighton1. Brian McDonald on the other side of the glass. The master controls at Sacked by BMAC. On the Twitch stream. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. ESPN975.com. ESPN975 app. ESPN. You can go to Google. You can go to Alexa. Say, play ESPN 97.5. They'll listen, and you can take us everywhere you want to go. And I like talking with Dan. Dan gives the actual legal perspective on things and, you know, kind of takes the emotion out of it. But you know, my biggest issue with the NCAA for a long time has always been they seem to go after the little schools and bully them while they let big schools do whatever the hell they want. They let North Carolina have an entirely fake program.
Yeah, they bully who they can bully because the big schools can push back with the money and the resources they have, where the little schools can't, like you pointed out.
I mean, they're trying to go after Jim Harbaugh at Michigan because he bought a kid a hamburger. We spent like $10. He bought a kid a hamburger, and he didn't recall buying the kid the hamburger. So because he didn't control, the NCAA is like, "We have the receipt. You lied. That's a tier one violation." It's like, shut the hell up.
Yeah, show us your worthless organization. They did it right there.
Like I
liked hearing that interview because I've always been of the mindset of that we didn't need the NCAA, so it was nice to actually hear from someone a little bit smarter than me with a law degree that said the same thing and actually provided the context for which that could happen.
For a long time, I've been waiting for Division IV, which would be screw NCAA rules. We, the Power Five, will make our own damn rules.
Yeah.
We're Division Four. So we supersede everything. And, like, if this is how – they're not going to be able to go to Texas A&M and say, hey, you know, you got an NCAA, you got an NIL violation here. A&M can be like, oh, well, you're fining us $1 million. Here's $1 million. Here's another $1 million. Go jump in a lake. You know, but if they turn around and they try doing that to, say, Sam Houston State, well, they're sunk. They don't have $1 million they can just throw in a pot. I mean, hell, they got millions of dollars they can just throw. And say, hey, Jimbo, you won 9 games this year. Here's an extra mil.
You'd be guys shocked if it was only a mil.
Yeah, right? But the idea of the haves and the have-nots, all this does is say, if you're not a super rich school, if you get out of line, if we even think, because you don't have to really get out of line, we can just presume you got out of line because circumstantial evidence. Hey, this kid had a big deal. You were one of the schools that were on his recruiting trail. Guilty. We don't know it was you, but hey, you were on the recruiting trail. Guilty. And this is why the NCAA needs to burn in a horrible fire.
And especially as our guest pointed out, a lot of this stuff will start off on internet message boards and just be rival teams fans upset they lost a game trying to take down their biggest rival.
So,
and that becomes the basis for slapping someone with a $1 million fine. It's just asinine.
I mean, won't that be great when you know, somebody from Florida State gets mad that a kid flipped and went to, you know, Jackson State. So we're going to go after Jackson State because they can't pay. You know, and these are the issues that I have. It's such a crock. The NCAA, I mean, if it wasn't for FIFA.
They're the only organization so corrupt they make the NCAA look good?
I mean, if it wasn't for FIFA and the IOC.
Okay, yeah, IOC's up there too.
NCAA is next!
Yeah, they are. If we had a Mount Rushmore of terrible sports organizations.
One, two, who's number four?
I don't know.
Who's number four?
It doesn't matter who's number four because those are one, two, three.
Might not need a number four.
No, we'll just take one of the faces off the mountain, and we'll just go with those three.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Oh, Dana White. We'll put Dana White's face up there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I love UFC. This power slap stuff is
it's horrible.
I mean, this is the stuff that
the whole sport of boxing and MMA is founded upon the idea of protecting yourself. It's the sweet science of, you know, protecting yourself from getting hit. At least boxing is. You can tell me more about MMA. The idea that you're just standing there with your hands down by the side I mean, what is that proving? I don't even know how that's supposed to be a sport or a competition. It's unprotected hits and, oh, well, you got up, so I guess you're a better athlete. I don't know why we have this.
It's literally the dumbass stuff that we used to do in college when we'd get really drunk and we'd start slapping each other.
That explains a whole lot, Patrick.
Did you ever, like, you know how...
No, I never did.
You never played a game
like
where, like, you and your friend punched each other on the arm until somebody, like, you know, said, okay, I'm like don't punch me anymore?
I mean, not really back and forth until one of us gave. It was more like you sneak up on somebody and then you owe them one.
But oh, it would be until somebody gave. It was the same thing with, like, smacking each other in the head.
I never did that.
You know, you just slap each other back and forth till somebody gave.
No, never did that.
These are the dumbass things you do in college when you're stupid drunk. They're putting this on television. Here's the craziest thing. So there was an MMA fighter. I want to say, was it Anthony Smith?
I don't know.
MMA fighter who was offered by Dana White to go and be a part of the power slap, because Dana's trying to find any kind of potential star name to get ratings for this thing because it's a ratings tank. They come on after AEW, and, like, as soon as it comes on, everybody changes the channel.
Oh, no, I did. I do. I record AEW, and as soon as it ends and Power Slap comes on, just, you know, hit the remote and go to something else.
So this guy, who is, like, a legit UFC fighter, told the story about how Dana offered him
$2,000. $2,000?
To be a participant in Power Slap. And I'm sitting there thinking, all right, so if this guy who fought for you in UFC,
man,
you're only willing to give him $2,000.
How, like, badly is that business in trouble that they can only afford to pay $2,000 to this guy?
No, what are they paying these randos who are going?
That too.
What are they
getting, like, that too.
Hey, would you trade $200 for a concussion?
No.
I mean, this is literally
$2,000 for a concussion.
Which, hey, look, we'll give you $300 to let somebody smack you in the head as hard as they can multiple times until they knock you out. You good?
Like, so you're not going to remember your kid's name tomorrow. $4,000, that covers it, right?
The $2,000 isn't even going to cover their hospital bill for their concussion.
That's an insulting number. That UFC fighter should have slapped Dana upside the head.
I mean, we know that UFC historically drastically underpays their fighters.
Because there's one man in charge, and there is no market. That's the problem. It's kind of like what happened when WWF at the time put WCW out of business. There was only one place to go to, and so these athletes have no bargaining power.
And this is kind of, I mean, look, the reality is...
I know there's Bellator, but it's not the same.
Right.
It's not at the same level.
Their perception is UFC is the major leagues.
Right.
Bellator is like AAA.
Exactly. That's my point.
And then,
even though there is another league, there really isn't. Not if you want to be at the top.
You got Strikeforce and K1 and, like, some of these... you know, organizations that are based in Japan or based in, you know, various Eastern European or Asian countries that some of which may have American sanctions against them. But there's this idea of, well, if you want to fight the best, you fight in UFC. But you're going to get paid the most in Bellator. And it's not even close. Like, they do those tournaments and guys, you know, get $1 million. In UFC... I mean, we saw this with guys fighting Jake Paul. Why are people fighting Jake Paul? Ben Askren made more money fighting Jake Paul than he made his entire UFC career.
Yeah, because there's an actual open market. That's why. With Dana White, there's not an open market. You get paid whatever Dana White decides to pay you.
This is why UFC...
That's why boxers get paid so well, because there's so many different promotions, so many different organizing bodies. There's an open market to where they can take the top dollar that doesn't exist in UFC.
This is why, you know, UFC and Dana make an absolute freaking killing, and the boxers are selling their gear so they can afford to have a training camp. Like the fighters in MMA, they're selling their gear so they can afford to have training camps, which is absolutely insane. All right, let's get back to the Houston Texans because, like I said, this is a good day. This is one of the best days that we've had for the Texans in 3 years.
Agree with me as far as this is the best day since, you know, name a time in Texans franchise history? Was it 24-0 in Kansas City?
Well, that day didn't end well. So let's say
we had to cut it off at the end of the first quarter
Let's say it was the week before the comeback win over Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's probably the last
good moment. Yeah, that wasn't super good impressive moment. Win, though.
That's the last good moment they had.
Yeah.
The last monster moment they had was probably drafting Deshaun.
Yeah. If you want to go back even further, maybe it's the biggest win since the biggest time for a Texans fan since the first playoff win over Cincinnati
when
J.J. Watt had the pick six and Andre Johnson got in the end zone and Aaron got in the end zone and you know, at that point, 11 years of or 10 years of Texans history, you finally got to exercise the demons and see them win a playoff game. So, I mean, this feels, obviously, I think that's probably the top moment in franchise history, which is definitely an indictment that we're talking about a wild card game. But I think this might be number two as far as, at least, I'll talk for myself, my excitement level.
That 2011 season, that was Wade Phillips' first season in Houston.
Yeah, it was.
They went from the 31st defense in the league to fourth overall and second in yards.
31st doesn't even do it justice, Patrick. I mean, their pass defense, and I wish I had the stats in front of me, but they were historically awful. There are only a handful of teams in all of NFL history that were worse as far as pass defense than the Texans in 2010. But they get Wade Phillips, they get Jonathan Joseph, they get Danielle Manning, and overnight they change the fortunes of that team.
And you know
they draft J.J. Watt. That helps too.
Win a division, win a playoff game for the first time, and then oddly enough, after that season, traded D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, look, hey, we're back here. It's 2023, and he's back, man. Let's forget about that. There was a lawsuit in the middle there. There were some bad times.
Well, you know, with that lawsuit, which of course was settled out of court and you know under seal, but you remember there were a lot of guys who got hurt at NRG in 2014.
Yeah, Clowney
got hurt week one.
I think they were right in that lawsuit. That turf for a long time was a problem. There were seams in it that were tearing guys up.
They were using a real surface. They would have these big trays of grass, of sod that they would move in, and the field basically came in trays.
Right, unlike Arizona where they would roll in the entire field and then roll it out. It was one piece growing together. But like you said, here in Houston, it was, let's insert a block here. Let's insert a block here. And so you had all these teams all over the field that never really grew together as one field, and it created some awful playing surfaces.
No, it was so bad that during the 2015 season, they replaced the natural surface with an artificial surface that they still use today. They did it mid-season.
Yeah, it was bad.
So that old surface, a lot of guys got claimed by the NRG Turf Monster. Hell, it even had its own
Twitter account. Yeah.
All right, so D'Amico Ryans introduced today officially as the head coach of the Houston Texans. Cal McNair, Nick Caserio, all there flanking D'Amico Ryans. And, of course, Cal McNair, first one to speak, talk about why the team actually chose D'Amico Ryans to be the guy.
This young man exhibited everything we wanted as far as leadership, football knowledge, led one of the top defenses for the last 2 years, and he fits exactly what we're looking for to lead our team into the future. And I'm not the first to say, but let me say it now, welcome you and your family to H-Town.
And like I said, you know, it's funny. Ever since the Houston Sports Awards, Cal McNair can speak English.
It was an upgrade for him.
It's like, you know, he upgraded. He upgraded the software, too. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, Cal can speak English. Like, oh, I got rid of Jack, and now I can talk like a normal person.
I think you already gave away the answer earlier in the show in the first hour. It's Hannah McNair. In previous times where we had Cal in these pre-recorded things or when they would stick him on radio and it would go terribly, Hannah McNair, his wife, wasn't by his side. Now she is, and I think she gives him confidence. She's able to pick up the pieces where he forgets what to say, and she steps in and kind of smooths it over. So I don't know why they decided to put her into the spotlight, but I'm glad they did, because I certainly think it's helped his presentation just immensely.
And look, I'm glad that he is. I know there's been talk about he gets like anxiety being in front of the microphone on camera and whatnot.
Yeah, not everyone's great at public speaking.
And listen, for as much as interesting story. Back in the day at another station.
The one that we used to work at together?
Yes.
Okay.
Back in the day, the flagship. My first year there, they were doing the 6'10 search. They were having
the
cheerleaders
ladies.
In the game. They basically, these were the 6'10. So they tried doing like a search, and ultimately they weren't getting a whole lot of people who were applying. They were getting some people that you did not want to look at applying. So they wound up reaching out to modeling agencies to get them to send them qualified candidates.
Oh, man. I worked there at the time, and I didn't even know that.
So somebody who used to work at that station, who occasionally appears on this station and drops the F word a lot, for those of you who should catch on, that's a pretty fair description of that person. He was supposed to be the host.
Oh,
and
no.
He hosted the first one.
Oh, no.
And if you want to talk about somebody who has anxiety talking in front of people.
You talked before, Lovey fitting the square peg in the round hole. That person trying to host basically a modeling competition is not the right choice. And I love that guy. He was a great dude.
So
but
that's not his strong
suit.
The very first one they had was actually in the station in that like big party room in the back.
Yeah.
And
the live lounge area.
Epic disaster. He couldn't speak three words. He was so uncomfortable. Ugh. I felt bad for him because we know him well enough. That's not what he does.
No, that's not his strong suit.
He was totally out of his element, and he was terribly uncomfortable. They brought it to me, knowing that my background in mortgages, I used to give presentations to groups of 1,000 people at a time. At some point, with my infant daughter in one hand and the clicker in the other on stage giving these presentations.
Yeah, you're hanging out with Wolf of Wall Street. You can handle this room.
He was one of my clients.
And you told me that story off the air. You can handle this room.
That is true. So they gave it to me. And we did it at a sports bar. And, like, that's my element. I can get up on stage and work a crowd. I can do that. We had a lot of fun doing that. And, that is – not everybody does that. And I'm not trying to take away from that other person who has done very well for himself, become an attorney, is now nationally hosting shows on Mad Dog Radio. So it's not like he can't work a microphone, because he can't. He just isn't comfortable in that.
They weren't using him in his best attributes,
right.
For sure. Yeah.
They were Lovie Smithing him.
Yeah, they 100%.
They were treating him like Derek Stingley Jr., like Lovie Smith, and they weren't using him to the best of his abilities. So that absolutely goes on, and it sucks. But I'm glad to see that. I don't know if Cal is getting more comfortable, or maybe he feels less stressed. Maybe it's Hannah, and they've worked together on making him more. Whatever it is, he is a different person in front of the camera and on the microphone. Noticeably since the Houston Sports Awards. Than he was any other time we saw him before that.
Yeah, I think it's Hannah. They're also, like you said, not only with the Houston Sports Awards, but the other situations they put him in, like you, less formal situations. And I think you pointed out well that maybe he feels just more comfortable in a more relaxed environment, which is natural. That I would say would apply to a lot of people. So maybe they're just figuring out finally after all these years how to package him in a way that is less awkward in his presentation and where he comes off better. Obviously, a lot of that is Hannah, but I also think it's just trying to get him in a more relaxed setting so he doesn't feel like he has to be, maybe in some ways, he feels like he doesn't have to be his dad. He doesn't have to be, and this is weird to say because he is the boss, but he doesn't have to present himself as like the A personality boss. He doesn't have to do that. He can just be more of his true personality, and that makes him more comfortable and comes off better on the microphone.
Well, I'm glad to see that he's I like that he's now able to show some personality, able to have a little fun, show that he's got a sense of humor. Like, I want my owner to be more relatable. And since the Houston Sports Wars, he's been more relatable. I like that. And today, he didn't talk a lot. He just talked a little bit, but he wasn't nervous or stuttering or any of the other things that we've kind of made fun of him about. That why can't you read the teleprompter and speak English? He's been much, much better in speaking. And I think he deserves credit for that, because that's, if you have that kind of issue, that is not, I mean, look, this is a city where we saw George Springer come to town, get called up, had a stuttering problem as a kid. At first was very reluctant to give interviews, didn't want to be on camera because he was afraid how people would perceive him, that every now and then he might stumble a little bit. And he was embraced. Yeah, and we got to learn George Springer. What a great dude. This guy's a lot of fun. His teammates love him. This guy's elite. Like, we got to learn all those things about him as he overcame that fear. So we'll hear more. We'll hear from Nick Cassero. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on the other side. Next.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
And we'll take a minute here for Dr. Ben Salendo, Texas Sinus and Snoring. Man, Dr. Ben changed my life. I went from having sinus infections every other month for 20 years, living on antibiotics, to not having any at all. 3.5 years now, haven't had a single sinus infection. Why? Dr. Ben Salento. Only doctor I'd seen. 20 years, 12 doctors, 2 states, that instead of, oh, I've got a sinus infection, here's some antibiotics, actually wanted to find out what was causing my sinus infections. The only one. 20 is the only doctor that asked. Said he wanted to get a CT scan to see what's going on inside my head. I was like, do I have to go schedule an appointment somewhere else? Got to go, you know, see another doctor. Nope. 3 doors down the hall, bang a left, took 5 minutes. Had the results up on the board 10 minutes later. We put a plan of action into play. Turned out I had staph infection inside my sinuses. Never really went away. It was highly resistant to antibiotics, so it just basically stayed there. They had to surgically remove it. It did tremendous damage to my sinuses, so they did a balloon sinuplasty to get rid of all the damaged tissue and open up my airways so that I could breathe. Turned out I had a deviated septum. Well, they fixed that too. I didn't even know I had it, but they fixed it. And 3.5 years later, I haven't had a sinus infection. I haven't had a sinus headache, and I feel great. And I sleep through the night, and I don't have any issues. And that's important because, you know, I used to snore like a chainsaw. That's what my kids just call me. They just call me the chainsaw. It's up. The chainsaw's running. They could be outside, windows closed. They'd hear me from the second floor bedroom because that's how loud I would snore. I would wake them up in the middle of the night because I snored so loudly. I don't snore anymore because my airways are open. So I sleep through the night, wake up feeling good. So does my wife. So do my kids. And probably so do the neighbors. So you don't have to live with sinus issues, and you don't have to live with snoring problems. All you need to do is call Dr. Ben Salento, 346-413-9313, 346-413-9313. Go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com, TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Tell them I sent you by. Texans introduced D'Amico Ryans as the head coach. Look, I know they won a press conference today. This was actually like a well-done, well-orchestrated, exciting, high-energy press conference, something the Texans haven't done in, I don't know, 6 years. This was different. You know, Lovie Smith didn't inspire anyone or make you feel good or give you energy. David Culley didn't inspire anyone. You know, Bill O'Brien made you want to turn the damn thing off. So this was a very different feel of a press conference for the Houston Texans, and for a team that hasn't had anything positive for 3 years. This was important to put some hope into the franchise. They got the right guy. They got somebody who was the top candidate in the cycle. who was wanted by other teams. Nobody else wanted Lovie Smith.
No one else wanted David Culley.
Hell, nobody even wanted David Culley to be the offensive coordinator, let alone be the head coach.
Yeah, he was what, previously the passing game coordinator for a team that, well, actually, I think he was passing game coordinator with the Ravens, but he was, I think, a wide receivers coach when the Chiefs had a year where no passing touchdowns went to a wide receiver.
Yes, that is correct. He was the wide receivers coach the year that the Chiefs did not have a passing touchdown
to a wide receiver touchdown.
And this was the guy they made the head coach. It was just like, you know, a Baltimore public, yeah, take him. we'll be happy to let you have him. Sure, no problem. You know,
but as you pointed out with all these other press conferences they had, especially announcing the last two head coaches, like, not only was there no excitement for the candidate that they hired, but it felt like these press conferences, you're almost in a battle. Like, you were having to have them be like an attorney trying to convince you that, oh, this guy is innocent. This guy is what we want. And obviously no one bought it. Whereas in this one, it was more, I don't want to say a party because it's a media situation and no one's, you know, really celebrating and high-fiving and clapping because that would be frowned upon. But everyone, I think, from what I saw on Twitter, was happy to be there. They were excited. Like, everyone was on board with this. It felt more like a celebration in a way.
You could tell in the demeanor and the action of Nick Caserio. He was genuinely excited. He has real energy. As opposed to go back and watch the press conferences with Lovie and Culley, you can see he's trying to project. He's trying to make it look like they're excited. No, you saw real excitement today. Here is Nick Caserio talking about how he found out, how he realized when D'Amico Ryans became the obvious choice to be the head coach of the Houston Texans.
We didn't really know each other, but the more and more time we spent together, it was almost a no-brainer as to who was the right fit for this team, this organization, this city. He's one of our own. He believes in our program. He's been in this building. He's been in our players' shoes. He's been in this city. And for him to come home, for him to give us the opportunity to be a partner with him, certainly grateful and appreciative and can't wait to get started and can't wait to get to work together.
Work together. It's a theme that both Caserio and Ryans shared multiple times this afternoon. They are looking forward to working together. This is going to be a collaboration between Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans. It's not going to be, you know, the old school, you know, the general manager picks the players. All right, coach, go figure it out. It's not going to be, you know, where the coaches have more power and the GM just does what he's told. This is going to be a real partnership. And I think that is very important to the success of the organization, that this is going to be a real partnership. Now, Caserio then went on to talk about Ryans and, you know, when they're looking at, okay, these are the things that we're looking for in our coach. These are the traits that we want. This is what we want them to have. How he checked every box.
Before we went into this, we kind of had 8 to 10 different characteristics or traits or criteria that are important. And there's so many things that go into being a great head coach. And part of it is going to be learned along the way. But when you talk about leadership, you talk about strategy, you talk about tactician, you talk about the ability to connect and lead people. You start to put all those things together. And we got off the call. I mean, we all kind of looked at each other like, holy cow, like, let's go play football tomorrow. But it wasn't a facade. It was just, that's who D'Amico is as a person and a man. And I think that resonated with us. And we kind of had to wait, had to be patient and kind of wait our turn. But in the end, like, all signs led back to D'Amico, which is why we're sitting in this room with everybody here today.
It was always going to be D'Amico.
As you pointed out, the energy with Caserio. The tone of his voice, the delivery he gave in there, selling us D'Amico, which we didn't really need to be sold because we're all on board with D'Amico. Compare that, go back, listen to the press conferences with Lovie and David Culley, because it couldn't be more different.
And it's noticeable. It is noticeable.
He sounds happy. He sounds excited. He's ready to work.
You can see it in
him. Yeah.
You could see it in his face, in his mannerisms, in his energy level. Nick Caserio is excited. You know, and I said this, there was a, you know, Caserio had given a media appearance, I want to say about a month ago. And one of the things that I noted in it was, you know, how he would say things without actually saying them. People would always say, oh, Cicero says a lot of nothing. He just talks for a long time. But if you actually listen to what he says, you could see he is telling you something very specifically without blatantly throwing somebody under the bus. He is a new man with Jack Easterby no longer in the organization. No longer is Easterby in the ear of the owner. No, you got to do this. You need to hire Josh McCown. We've got to have Josh McCown. No, that whole coaching firm search, let's just throw that out the window. Let's just go get Josh McCown. Let's just do that. And ultimately, Lovie Smith became a CYA fallback option because they were the Texans' firing of Culley was one of the examples given, one of the exhibits in the Flores lawsuit.
Yeah.
So they were scared, and basically it was, all right, well, let's just hire. Cicero was finally able to hire a coach. The first time he got here, he didn't really get to hire a coach. Just nobody wanted the job. All right, the Texans had no talent, no money, no draft picks, and a quarterback who wasn't going to play. Nobody wanted that job. Everyone knew it was a disaster. Everybody knew that 2 years ago, the Houston Texans were being set up to fail, that it was going to take several years to clean up the mess left behind by Bill O'Brien. This was not unknown, and that's why, ultimately, Texans fans got stuck with David Culley. Nobody wanted the job. Now, they didn't need to give him a 5-6 year deal, but whatever. It's Cal's money. He wants to blow it. It's his business. Lovie Smith wound up getting a job because, well, they were scared. They were still a lousy job. They had draft picks. They still had no money, and they still had no talent. And you know what? Nick Cicero hadn't had a full draft by himself yet. People didn't know how well he would draft. Well, by all accounts, it didn't take very long people to figure out Nick Cicero knows how to draft. Now this is the most attractive the job has ever been in the 10 years that I've been here. I can't say what it was when, you know, when Gary took the job. They were coming off of that terrible year with Dom Capers where they had been gone up, and then crashed.
I would say this is more attractive because, I mean, obviously going into that, they had the number one pick. But I they didn't have multiple first in back-to-back years, certainly. So I would give this a slight edge there.
I mean, this could be a situation where they could wind up with $60-plus million in cap space by, you know, getting rid of a few players that probably aren't going to be here anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to have the second pick, the 12th pick. They got 5 picks on the first 73. They got 11 picks overall. They got 10 more picks next year, including 2 firsts and 2 thirds. And you've cast space, you've got young talent. Like, this is a team that, yeah, they won 3 games. They should have started the season 3-0, not 0-3. This team easily could have won 6, maybe more. They should have beat Dallas. They should have beat Kansas City, who totally forgot to show up in that game. Like, it is very easy to look at this team and say, that should have been a 6-win team. That is something coaches want. They want to see a team that was bad and underperform, because now they're going to go in, they're going to get that team to perform right, they're going to be a hero. That is Bill Parcells 101.
Yeah, it's not hard to imagine. You pointed out you have the tie against the Colts in week 1 where they blow the big late lead. You lose in overtime to Kansas City. Dallas beats you on the last second kick. I mean, right there, if you have a competent coaching staff, a little bit more talent with these first round picks in the salary cap room, it's not hard to see this team jumping to 6-7 wins and really showing off D'Amico as a great hire. So it, not only you got the cap space, you got the draft picks to kind of put your stamp on this team, but I think it's a great chance and an opportunity to get credit year one for doing a great job turning a team around if you're going to be able to show a jump from 3 wins to potentially 7.
Right, what could this team have been if they just had competent quarterbacking? Just say top 20. Not even just top 20 quarterbacking, not Davis Mills throwing ground balls, airmailing guys who are wide open, you know, forgetting what to do with the football, throwing hideous, hideous picks.
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about, obviously, the Kansas City, the Dallas, and the Indianapolis game. That's six. But then I think you can also throw the losses to Denver and Chicago in there as games they probably should have won with just at least decent, moderate-level quarterback play and not shooting themselves in the foot. So now you're talking eight wins. If D'Amico is who we hope he is, and they get these draft picks right, they add the right pieces in free agency with the salary cap, based upon what they did last year, it's not hard to see this team jumping up to seven or eight wins.
Now,
not saying they will, but it's within the realm of possibilities.
It's very much within the realm of possibility because, look, the Titans are falling backwards.
Oh, yeah, they don't have a...
The Colts have issues. Only the Jaguars are on the up. It's not a great division. There is definitely an opportunity.
Oh, and you'll have a last place schedule too.
To move up in the power rankings of the AFC South. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans next.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical Rx, and by Dr. Christo Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, B-Mac, I got to ask you a question here. Do you know a guy named Johnny Diaz?
Johnny Diaz? No, it doesn't ring a bell.
He don't like you.
Oh, really?
Johnny Diaz
has
texted the show 29 times tonight.
29? About me?
About you.
All 29?
That you need to shut the hell up.
Wow.
29 times since 7 o'clock that, why are you talking? This is Creighton's show. Why are you talking? You need to shut up, producer guy!
Would you like to answer that question for Johnny?
If I didn't want B-Mac talking, he wouldn't be on the show.
There you go.
Because it is my show.
Yeah, there
it is. If I didn't want him to talk, he wouldn't be here. Obviously, I know Brian a long time. We worked together at 610. I have a ton of respect for Brian, who used to produce Afternoon Drive on 610. How the hell he's doing the night show with me, I don't actually know, but I will be glad to take the fact that I have a guy who is supremely overqualified for this show doing the show. I'll take it. B-Mac's great at what he does. I'm very happy to have him. I'm lucky to have him. Johnny, listen, I don't know why you're so angry with B-Mac. B-Mac is a pro. Embrace him. He's a good dude. It's going to make the show better. Embrace him. You know what? Sometimes I get tired of having to talk for 2 hours straight. So, let's keep an open mind.
As a natural heel, I kind of just want to take over the show and talk the rest of the way. Just to get more heat with Johnny.
I am the advocate for the heel, Brian McDonald. let's hit the phones. Andrew, you're on Late Hits. What's up, Andrew? Andrew, going once. Andrew!
Hey, can you hear me?
Hey, there he is! Oh my goodness, you were like a half a second from getting dropped.
God, love, I am so happy to be on the show. Just happy to be here, Clark. Look, I'm a little concerned about D'Amico Ryans.
What are you concerned about here?
I feel like it may have been a little too early in the process.
Hey, Andrew, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Are you taking lewds right now?
Taking lewds?
Yeah, you taking lewds?
No,
you
no,
got this
no.
like really like super chill thing.
He sounds
going
medicated,
on.
If I'm honest here.
And I'm a little jealous because I kind of wish that I was feeling that same way right about now and enough of nothing. So, this is a great move. It's a home run move. They could not have done better here. This is the biggest grand slam they could possibly have hit in this coaching cycle.
Walmart tried. I mean, Walmart money tried to outbuy and get the get D'Amico Ryans from the Texans,
and they got the big fat double rods because D'Amico wanted to be here. That's how that
he
works.
Turned down what Arizona. It was Carolina that he also turned down at one point. So this was, like, as you've pointed out many times, probably the top candidate in the market. I mean, obviously Sean Payton's a strong RB there, but according to Ian Rappaport, Denver wanted D'Amico more than Sean Payton. Only went back to Sean Payton when D'Amico turned them down, tried to offer him more money, but it didn't matter because this was the dream job for D'Amico.
I mean, look, here's the problem with Sean Payton. How much did it cost him in the draft pick compensation?
Yeah, you didn't want to give up that first round pick.
And now they're going to have to pay him how much? I don't know if they're going to pay him a full $20 million, but I know he was looking for.
It was, I think they report like $18 million a year.
That is some mucho dinero.
Yeah.
There's no other coach in the NFL making half that. No other coach in the. I mean,
I think Belichick is.
No, Gruden was making the top. He was $10 million a year.
I've seen reports that the Belichick is around 20.
Well, but, I mean, Belichick's contract also
is not
public.
He's got six Super Bowls, so.
His contract's not public, and he is de facto coach and GM.
Yeah. No, there's certainly some factors that would bump his pay, but
although I guess, you know, Sean Payton going to Denver, probably. I mean, look, if you're George Payton, you're kind of like, I think I'm about to cede all of my authority, and I'm just going to do what I'm told because Sean Payton's now my boss. Like that's kind of how that's going to work now, right? Anyway, let's hear from D'Amico Ryans because you want to talk about a guy who was pumped, excited, like every possible emotional gamut running to open this press conference. Here's D'Amico Ryans at the start.
Now here with the Texans, I can't thank you enough. Kyle, all right, Nick, can't thank you guys enough for believing in me, all right, to give me this opportunity to lead the Texans. The team that drafted me here in 2006, I mean, this is just, it's a surreal moment for me. And I'm thankful to God that he's just paved the way for me through everything that I've been through in life and for my paths to end back up here in my home in H-Town where it all started. I mean, it's a blessing that it's still, you know, it's still for me, I'm still trying to believe it, right? But this is outstanding, man, to all my former players, all right, my former teammates that are here. And it's great to see all you guys here, right? The work we all put in together here, it means so much to me just to see you guys here, see your faces. Man, for the support you guys have given me, it's been outstanding.
It's a guy who, I mean, look, he called it his dream job. This is, you know, the opportunity to be the head coach of the team that once took you 33rd overall, that you were the defensive rookie of the year. You were a two-time Pro Bowler. You were an All-Pro. You were the team captain. You're the guy they called Cap. You know, in college, you know, Cal McNair told the story about how when he was in college at Alabama, he was the captain of the team, and they called him Coach. So, like, this is a guy who has been a leader everywhere that he's gone. When asked about what kind of players that D'Amico Ryans is looking for, here is what the new Texans head coach had to say.
What we're looking for, what I'm looking for, and the type of players that we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm, right? We want players who have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do, right? That's what you're going to see from Texans football, right? You're going to see fast, you're going to see physical, you're going to see toughness. Mostly we want smart players who truly are dedicated to being the best that they want to be and guys who are coachable and guys who want to go win.
That sounds like D'Amico Ryans is a player. You know, he talked about, you know, how much he loves being able to help players and he wants to make them the best they can be on and off the field. And you know what? That resonates with the McNair family.
I'd sign up for 53 D'Amico Ryans on the field.
You know, I mean, you think about, you know, Bob McNair, when he first was awarded the Texans franchise, he said, you know, they were going to have players that you could be proud of. They weren't going to have these, you know, problem guys. And it almost became a joke at one point. It was like, oh, no, we're not going to get that guy because, you know, they're a trouble guy. They're a trouble guy. The Texans generally don't have those guys. Right? You don't have.
Yeah, the guys like Deshaun Watson aren't someone they've had, you know, just littered throughout their history.
No, and you know what? Deshaun got his issues. Bye.
Yeah,
you're out of here.
Yeah, and he was gone as soon as it happened. I mean, going back the cut before, you remember at the start of this whole process when the Texans were deciding how they were going to find their next head coach, and we got that report. I believe it was from Aaron Wilson who told us that DeMeco Ryans was not interested in the Texans job, and he turned down their interview request.
There were a lot of
reports. In hindsight, how foolish does that report look?
You know what, though? There were a lot of people who reported that DeMeco Ryans had no interest in the Texans job. That, you know, the idea
of... How did they get it so wrong?
Somebody... there was obviously a very reputable source who had it wrong.
Someone in Denver who wanted to get DeMeco for themselves?
Maybe. Maybe somebody that is close to DeMeco who just read it wrong. Maybe they were having a conversation one day and they were like, well, you know, they've let two African-American head coaches go year one. You know, I did sue them once upon a time for their crappy field. I didn't like the way I got shoved out the door and traded to Philadelphia. But that very quickly, it was like on a Tuesday that the report came out that he was going to have no interest in a Texans job whatsoever. And then the following Monday, the Texans had requested DeMeco Ryans, and they were going to get him.
Yeah, and after that, I know both Nick Caserio and Cal McNair talked to the media and both said that they had not been denied by any candidates that they're requesting interviews with.
So, you know, it's one of those things. Sometimes there is a legit source that people trust who's been right on a whole lot of things, has been trustworthy, and they just got it wrong. Because a lot of people had that report, and they all had it wrong.
It feels like it was more of an assumption than a report, is the way it comes across. Because I don't see how, if the report was even remotely true, I don't see how they could have gotten DeMeco from that point to the way he talks now about how it was the only job he wanted, and he was turning down other jobs to take it.
Well, and that's why it comes back to, you know, who is this person that apparently had trust and had clout that read the room wrong? Or just had it wrong, because the thing that they would have an agenda. If you have an agenda and you burn all your sources, well, they're never going to talk to you again. But you're now no longer trustworthy. So to them, their value, their importance in life, just because nobody cares about them anymore. But it does make you wonder, like, how did you get it wrong? Now people say, well, you know, a lot of these reporters, instead of reporting, you know, this fact, that fact, it's, you know, they propose it as, oh, this is like their opinion or they think. Many times when you see a reporter give you well, I think this is what could happen. The reason they're posing it as a summation, as a speculation, is because they got it from a source they can't reveal. And they can't put where they got it from because it's probably going to point too many fingers at that person. So they present it as their own guess, right? Like their own surmise.
Yeah, to protect the source.
They're protecting sources.
Right.
So when you see that from a reporter, understand what that is. They are covering for a source who is giving information that even if you just said from an unnamed source or from a source that would have knowledge, you know, with the team or the NFL or the player, whatnot, that it would be too obvious to too many people who that person is. So the reporter will then create it as their own stamp. Like, this is their own guess. This is their own, you know, they're coming up with their own idea of, hey, I think this is possible. This is my hypothesis type of thing. They got it from somebody they can't put a line back to it. So they propose it as, hey, well, you know, this could happen. They got that fed. Like almost every time they got it fed. This is how, you know, the inner workings of when you're a writer, that's kind of how the game gets played. Speaking of, you heard B-Mac talk about, you know, Denver. There were competing reports between Adam Schefter and Ian Rapoport about whether or not the Denver Broncos tried to make a last-second run back at DeMeco Ryans the day that he was interviewing in Houston. Schefter said, no, they'd already moved on. Rapoport said, no, they pitched him again that day, and he told them no.
What we've learned is Rapoport may have been right, and Ian
Adam Schefter may have been carrying water for a general manager, which he has been exposed for doing before. Here is D'Amico talking about why it was easy to choose Houston over Denver.
I'm thankful for the Denver Broncos, and we had great interviews there, great people there. But when it came down to it, there is no place I wanted to be any more than H-Town. So it was an easy pick for me. It was a no-brainer to be here. All right, be home. It was a no-brainer. So it wasn't a difficult decision at all. It was very easy.
Very easy. No-brainer. When was the last time we heard about somebody thinking the Texans were the better job and it was a no-brainer?
I think the answer, this was the first time. I can't think of a single time where that sort of thing has been said about the Houston Texans before.
I don't recall it ever being said.
It always feels like people are settling for the job or just coming here because they're forced to because the team drafted them. But D'Amico wanted to be here, and I think that's become very clear.
And look, that makes a lot of difference. That, you know, you want to get a guy that wants to be here. You want a guy who's going to be in line with the general. Look, here's what we know. David Culley was never going to be aligned with Nick Casario because David Culley, I mean, he couldn't even say the word analytics.
Yeah, he didn't like it. No, I think it makes a big difference. And this goes for any job you're in. If you want to be there, if you're motivated to be there and to be successful because not only do you want to be successful for yourself, but you like who you're working for and you want to make them successful, that obviously gets, I think, better work out of you and makes you work harder. So I think that, like any other job, it's great to have an employee that wants to make that employer successful in addition to making himself successful. So I think it's great news. And not that D'Amico or any coach that you would hire wouldn't work hard, but I think it elevates what you're going to get from them even more.
Ryan's talked about some of the things he's excited about, reasons to be excited about coaching the Houston Texans. And he not only did he say he's excited about coaching the young players, he even name-dropped a few.
That's what excites me the most, is being able to work with young guys and young guys who are talented. Stingley has outstanding talent, scouted him the last year. And I know the talent that he has, know the competitor that he is. Right, going to put him in position to make a lot of plays for us. Right, put him in a position where he can excel and showcase his talents. Right, seeing Jalen Petrie, loved him coming out of Baylor, loved the blitzing, loved the just the play speed of Petrie, and just to see him come out this past year and the way five interceptions, the way he attacked the ball, man, Jalen, we got to continue to do that. Right, we got to continue to take the ball away. Christian, linebacker, fast, right, physical linebacker. Those are the type of players, right, we can build around. So that does excite me when you have the young talent that we have here. That does excite me.
Where Culley and Lovey failed to develop talent, here is a guy in D'Amico who's already identified the strengths of his players and knows how he wants to use them to their strengths. I mean, this is night and day from what the Texans have been calling a head coach for the last 2 years. This is a big deal. Things today is like the new era for the Texans. No longer is the dark stormy cloud over NRG. Like the rebuild where things start moving up literally started today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Want to say thanks to my man Dan Lust from Marred Hawk and Hamroff, the Conduct Detrimental podcast, our callers, texters, tweeters, twitchers, my man Brian McDonald on the other side of the glass, who, yes, he doubles as my co-host, and I'm very happy to have him, Johnny Diaz. That's how that works. Happy for my man B-Mac. Appreciate you. We're back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. We're going to have plenty more. We'll talk Texas. We'll talk Astros. Maybe we'll even work in some fun things and make fun of stuff as well because, you know, it's Friday, and on Friday we tend to get a little off the rails. In the meantime, we'll see you tomorrow night. H-10!